A few summers ago, we sat in our yard around a fire with several young adults, and as darkness descended, the ever-present fireflies became visible. The longer we sat, the more their numbers multiplied and increased. And one of the young men around the fire, a San Diego native, told us he'd never seen a firefly before. It took a couple of back-and-forth comments to understand, really, he'd never seen a firefly before. At which point, one of the other young men, a Wisconsin native, said, "This scene here, sitting around a fire, catching fireflies on a summer night, that epitomizes, in a nutshell, the experience of being a 12-year-old boy growing up in Wisconsin summers." We could have asked each other what experiences we had on summer nights. We could ask that same question here of our own experiences with nighttime and light interspersed with darkness. As much as I love fireflies, that was not my experience growing up. But like all of us, I have my own stories of darkness and nighttime. Mine, for example, included fond memories of playing flashlight tag with siblings and neighbors in the late fall. It was exhilarating and captivating to be hiding in plain sight, but invisible to each other. My mom's signal that it was time for dinner was quite simple. She just turned on all the outside lights. Time to come in. I also have a visceral memory as a young adult standing in the mountain meadows of California while friends brought telescopes and star maps. The beauty of the canopy revealed a certain sadness in me that for too long I had not noticed the night sky, or I had given up on the night sky. Each of us has our own stories, which confirms what Barbara Brown Taylor writes in her book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, that our experience of darkness is local, social, cultural, and even economic. Our experiences of darkness are rooted in the circle of people that surrounded us, the places we lived, the stories we were told, and the fears or joys that accompanied us and those stories. In addition, these same experiences of literal darkness shape how we understand spiritual darkness as well, what it means in our journey of faith, the emotions that accompany it, our expectations of how it relates to another powerful religious symbol, the one spoken of in our text today, that of light. I loved this video we used in conjunction with the biblical passage, so many ways in which we experience light across our lives, across our landscapes, in our spiritual journey. So many ways in which our experiences of seasonal and lunar light shapes how we hold light in our walk of faith. So to say this is a season of light coming into darkness is to name the obvious. We exist always at the intersection and the interplay of darkness and light together. And one of the things I ponder when I read these texts, especially the Old Testament texts, is how the role of darkness has shifted over the millennia. For the ancient Jews, nighttime darkness could be a very terrifying reality. If there was no moonlight, a path would be treacherous. There were natural and man-made dangers and threats all around. In a culture with no electricity, the image of a light in the darkness was almost otherworldly. The need in their lives was not for more dark. The need was to trust that even through the long nights, God's light and love would prevail. And thus, scriptural images of light coming in the darkness arose. But in our lives, I think the issue of darkness is maybe different. If you want to see stars, the challenge today is, where do you go to get away from artificial light? the issue we deal with that the ancients didn't is the ubiquitous nature of artificial light. Bidden or unbidden, we can't get away from the light. And as such, we often lose perspective on the benefits of the dark. The paradox of light and dark together. The power of light when coupled with the beauty of dark. Spiritually, we search for language to embrace the realities of both darkness and light in new ways. And one of the ways we do that is through music, which is why we sang longing for light. Christ be our light, as well as joyful is the dark, holy hidden one. At our longest night service on the 21st, one of our prayers will be what's called a blessing for the longest night, written by artist Jan Richardson, written in the wake of the death of her husband when he was in his 50s. Her own experience of spiritual darkness led her to reflect on how it shapes and influences the walk of faith. And she writes, and we will pray, "All throughout these months, as the shadows have lengthened, this blessing, the blessing of the longest night, has been gathering itself, making ready, preparing for this night. It has practiced walking in the dark, traveling with eyes closed, feeling its way by memory, by touch, by the pull of the moon, even as it wanes. So believe me when I tell you this blessing will reach you even if you have not light enough to read it. It will find you even though you cannot see it coming. You will know the moment of its arriving by a release of the breath you have held so long, a loosening of the clenching of your hands, of the clutch around your heart, a thinning of the darkness that had drawn itself around you. This blessing does not mean to take the night away, but it knows its hidden roads, knows the resting spots along the path, knows what it means to travel in the company of a friend. So when this blessing comes, take its hand, get up, set out on the road you cannot see. This is the night when you can trust that any direction you go, you'll be walking toward the dawn. Darkness is the seedbed for the lighted months that follow, within the earth's cycles and within our own emotional and spiritual cycles. One of my mentors, Parker Palmer, once wrote, "In the visible world of nature, a great truth is concealed in plain sight. Darkness and light are not opposites. They are held together in the paradox of the hidden wholeness," to quote Thomas Merton. "In paradox, opposites do not negate each other. They cohere in mysterious unity at the heart of reality. So often we want light without darkness. But if we allow the paradox of darkness and light to be, the two will conspire to bring wholeness and health to every living thing." During this Advent season, I've been looking for voices, preferably women, who can speak to us clearly and directly. And this week I wanted a voice speaking darkness, creatively holding the paradox of its connection to light. A year ago, a woman named Valerie Kaur, a religious Sikh activist and a lawyer, spoke at an interfaith service organized after a series of hate crimes across our country. The speech became somewhat famous because of some of the language she used, and in the face of the dark times facing our country, she asked, "What if this is not the darkness of the tomb, but of the womb?" I'd like to go back to her words and share the story from which that question arose. She spoke on Christmas Eve 103 years ago. My grandfather waited in a dark and dank cell. He sailed by steamship across the Pacific Ocean from India to America, leaving behind colonial rule. But when he landed on American shores, immigration officials saw his dark-skinned, his tall turban worn as part of his Sikh faith, and saw him not as a brother, but as a foreigner, a suspect, and threw him behind bars where he languished in darkness for months, until the single man, a white man, a lawyer named Henry Marshall, filed the writ of habeas corpus that released him on Christmas Eve, 1913. My grandfather, Kahar Singh, was a farmer, free to practice the heart of his Sikh faith, love and oneness. So when his Japanese-American neighbors were rounded up and taken to their own detention camps to the deserts of America, he went out to see them when no one else would. He looked after their farms until they returned home. He refused to stand down. Even in the wake of September 11th, she continued, I thought we were making a new nation for the next generation. And her grandfather's example, she said, prompted her to become an immigration lawyer. And then she continued, and then my son was born. On Christmas Eve this year, I watched him ceremoniously put the milk and cookies by the fire for Santa Claus. And after he went to sleep, I then drank the milk and ate the cookies. I wanted him to wake up and see them gone in the morning. I wanted him to believe in a world that was magical. But I am leaving my son a world that is more dangerous than the one I was given. I am raising, we are raising, a brown boy in America, a brown boy who may someday wear a turban as part of his faith. And in America today, as we enter an era of enormous rage, as white nationalists hail this moment as their great awakening, as hate acts against Sikhs and our Muslim brothers and sisters are at an all-time high, I know there will be moments, whether on the streets or in the schoolyards, where my son will be seen as foreign, as suspect, as a terrorist. Just as black bodies are still seen as criminal, brown bodies are still seen as illegal, trans bodies are still seen as immoral, indigenous bodies are still seen as savage, the bodies of women and girls seen as someone else's property. And when we see these bodies not as brothers and sisters, then it becomes easier to bully them, to rape them, to allow policies that neglect them, that incarcerate them, that kill them. Yes, the future is dark. On this New Year's Eve, this watch night, I close my eyes and I see the darkness of my grandfather's cell. And I can feel the spirit of ever-rising optimism in the Sikh tradition called Kardi Kala, ever-rising high spirits within him. So the mother in me asks, what if? What if this darkness is not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb? What if our America is not dead, but a country that's waiting to be born? What if the story of America is one long labor? What if all of our grandfathers and grandmothers are standing behind now, those who survived occupation and genocide, slavery and Jim Crow, detentions and political assault? What if they are whispering in our ears, you are brave? What if this is our nation's greatest transition? And so what does the midwife tell us to do? Breathe. And then? Push. Because if we don't push, we'll die. And if we don't push, our nation will die. And tonight, we will breathe. Tomorrow, we will labor in love through love. And your revolutionary love is the magic we will show our children.
Yes.
The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. In this time of seasonal darkness, let us not forget how important this time of rest and fallowness is to sustaining our strength, personal and social. Let us not forget how important this time is to the growth and bounty to come. Let us not forget that without darkness there is no light. In this time of cultural darkness, let us not forget the good that has come from painful and confusing times such as these. Let us not believe the internal voices that tell us we are doomed. rather in community. Let us ask what is being born and how we can help it be so. Would you pray with me? Help us, gracious God, to breathe. To pause. Help us in this season of Advent. This season of your coming. To watch. To listen. To wait. Help us in this time of both personal and social confusion and darkness that we may be facing. To trust the wisdom of ancestors who are showing us a way. The wisdom of biblical forebears who give us language for these days and this walk. Help us in this season of Advent to trust in your coming. To trust that we can be part of your coming to the world.